Okay, beautiful people, the last dose this week. When we stopped, we were in the middle of looking at drugs that function as fakes, anti-metabolites. We looked at folic acid antagonists, and now we're going to look next at a class of drugs that are antagonists of purines. And we'll use one as our example. There are others, 6-mercaptopurine. And this is 6-mercaptopurine. And here's its chemical structure. So it differs from the endogenous purine by a hydroxyl here being replaced by a sulfhydryl, or if you want me to even reduce it more simply, sulfur replaces oxygen. And this is 6-mercaptopurine. And this is an example of a drug that has to be activated by a cell in order to become cytotoxic. We said one of the ways that resistance can play out is the cell doesn't activate the drug. Well, this drug has to be activated, and it's activated from 6-mercaptopurine to the nucleotide. And the enzyme that does this has a very long name. You can use the abbreviation if you like. It is a salvage enzyme. It's an enzyme found in the cell to recover, to salvage purines so that the cell doesn't have to make it, synthesize these compounds from scratch. And it's called hypoxanthine guanine phosphoribosyl transferase, or HGPRTAs. And it simply attaches or takes the purine and converts it or adds the ribose phosphate. This activated ribose phosphate then can interfere with a number of steps involved in purine biosynthesis. So let me just flash you back to biochemistry quickly. This is the structure of purine, and this is the numbering system. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. One of the ways that this drug works is by feedback inhibition of the rate-controlling step in the biosynthesis of purines. And this rate-controlling step is carried out by an enzyme called aminotransferase. Now, let me just orient you here as to how the cell goes about biosynthesizing purines. It starts with the ribose phosphate. So here's the first or the starting material for the biosynthesis of purines. 5-phosphoribosyl, 1-pyrophosphate. So one has the ribose phosphate, and this aminotransferase is going to transfer an amino group to this position here, and that's amino or nitrogen number 9. So the system is built by starting with the sugar, adding the 9 nitrogen atom, building the 6-membered ring, and then finally closing the 5-membered ring. The first step is to take the phosphoribosyl pyrophosphate and transfer from glutamine by means of an aminotransferase enzyme this nitrogen to produce 5-phosphoribosyl amine. This aminotransferase enzyme is the rate-controlling enzyme in the biosynthesis of purines and subject to feedback inhibition. So one of the ways that this drug works is to feedback inhibit this step. The other way it works is to inhibit, now I'm getting fuzzy, various interconversions that are required to take inosinic acid monophosphate to ultimately produce adenylic acid and ultimately biosynthesize guanylic acid. So inositic acid monophosphate One pathway gives adenylic, another pathway gives guanylic, and the knockoff, the anti-metabolite, when activated, can inhibit these inner conversions, leading to diminished amounts of adenylic acid and decreased amounts of guanylic acid. So that's the mechanism by which 6-mercaptopurine works. The cell becomes resistant to this compound by two mechanisms. One, cancer cells become resistant by decreasing the activation of the drug to the ribose phosphate. In other words, decreased HGRPTA's activation is one. And the other is this 6-mercaptopurine is a substrate for an enzyme called xanthine oxidase that metabolizes it to 6-thiouric acid. Certain cancer cells have elevated levels of xanthine oxidase that rapidly convert 6-mercaptopurine to the thiouric acid. And so diminishing the concentration in the cell that potentially can become cytotoxic. Well, since we're at it, let me mention one potential side effect, one potential drug-drug interaction that results from this. And that is, in cancer patients that have increased amounts of cellular destruction and nucleic acid catabolism, those individuals have, some individuals will have elevated uric acid levels leading to gout. The treatment of gout, one of the treatments, is to give a compound called allopurinol that inhibits xanthine oxidase. Okay. If you do that and the patient is taking 6-mercaptopurine, you are going to elevate because you're going to block its metabolism and you're going to exacerbate toxicities. Let me say it another way. If a patient is on allopurinol, the dose of 6-mercaptopurine must be reduced. That only holds for 6-mercaptopurine, not for its cousin 6-thioguanine. Now, the other toxicity, as you might imagine, and is dose-limiting, is bone marrow. This drug is clinically used primarily in the maintenance of remission in acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So we've looked at folate, we've looked at purine, now we're going to take a look at a pyrimidine anti-metabolite, one that we have seen previously. We visited it previously. Let me just put it in context. The antifungal 5-flucytosine, in order to be affected, had to be activated to 5-fluorouracil. Here's 5-fluorouracil. The knockoff is fluorine replaces hydrogen. Yes. Leukemia. The difference here is fluorine looks like hydrogen. Fluorine is replaced hydrogen, carbon-fluorine bond, the strongest covalent bond. The drug was developed because there was the observation made that certain cancers had increased demand or requirement for uracil. And this is simply a uracil knockoff or anti-metabolite. Here's the drug. The drug is administered, diffuses into the target cell, and then it can undergo a variety of fates. And all of these require some degree of activation. So it can be converted to the ribose phosphate, monophosphate, triphosphate, and one fate of the activated nucleotide is to inhibit RNA synthesis. It is believed the primary fate, the primary cytotoxic pathway event involves 5-fluorouridine monophosphate being ultimately converted to 5-fluorodeoxyuridylic acid. And this compound is a competitive inhibitor of the enzyme we've hit many times, thymidylic synthetase, an enzyme that transfers a methyl group to this position. So in the uracil, this carbon-hydrogen bond would be cleaved and a methyl group introduced, the source of the methyl group being the activated folate. In this case, that bond is not breakable, and the drug is a competitive inhibitor of thymidylic synthetase. Now it's more complicated than that. Not only is it a competitive inhibitor, so it binds to the active site, but the cofactor, N5N10-methylene tetrahydrofolic acid, also binds and entraps it. And so one gets a tertiary or a ternary complex of enzyme, drug, cofactor that is, for all practical purposes, irreversible and leads to then termination of synthesis of thymidylic acid, which is a building block for DNA. In order to make certain that cells, neoplastic cells, have sufficient supply of cofactor, it is common practice to co-administer leucovorin to make certain that the cell's supply of reduced tetrahydrofolate cofactor is sufficient. Now, in terms of toxicity, one sees initially nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, alopecia, all being associated. And alopecia and many of these side effects are much like bone marrow, much like emesis. And that is, some drugs produce more severe than others. It's highly variable across the spectrum. The drug causes severe ulceration of the oral and GI mucosa, and it causes severe bone marrow toxicity. How is it used? It is used to treat slow-growing tumors, slow-growing solid tumors, colorectal cancer, breast, ovarian, gastric, pancreatic, all are susceptible to the cytotoxic effects of 5-fluorouracil. So it is a drug, again, that's used in protocols to treat slow-growing solid tumors. Yeah?
I thought you said cancer cells don't take up leucovorin very well.
Ah, but not all. Not all. Okay. Osteogenic sarcoma, choriocarcinoma are particularly resistant to methotrexate because of loss transfer. They are still able to take some up, but not fully. Okay? Alkylating agents, knockoff anti-metabolites. Then people started to look to nature for sources of cytotoxic compounds, nature coming in two forms: plants, antibiotics. So we're going to look at plant-derived cytotoxic agents, and there's some really important drugs here that we'll talk about. One of the class of drugs, yeah? The modes of resistance, I am sorry. The modes of resistance are primarily associated with decreased activation. There's multiple interconversions required to get the active compound. Decreased ability of the cell to activate the drug. Plants. Place we're going to start are with two compounds that are remarkably structurally similar, but that work by the same mechanism, but that have different dose-limiting toxicities and different clinical uses. And these are vinca alkaloids. They are derived from vinca rosea, the periwinkle plant. And there are two, and we're going to simply distinguish these alphabetically. There's vinblastine, B, and vincristine, C. So we're going to talk about B and C. And so they differ. Here's the structure of the vinca alkaloids. They differ very subtly. Vinblastine has a methyl group. Vincristine has a formyl group at this position. They are derived from plants. They are cell cycle specific. They are cell cycle specific to the M phase, which just reminds me, I may not have stated that all of the anti-metabolites are cell cycle specific to the S phase. So we've looked at alkylating agents independent of the cell cycle. We've looked at anti-metabolites, cell cycle specific to DNA synthesis S phase, and the vinca alkaloids are also cell cycle specific to mitosis, or the M phase. And here's how they work to bring about their effect. There's several pictures you have, but this is by far the simplest to speak from and to discuss. During mitosis, and specifically during the metaphase of mitosis, the mitotic spindle is being both constructed and deconstructed. The mitotic spindle that is composed of tubulin dimers is both being built or assembled and being disassembled. And this is a dynamic process that's going on during metaphase. Vinca alkaloids, vincristine and vinblastine, bind to tubulin and they inhibit the process of assembly. So they bind to the tubulin dimer and they block the polymerization of the tubulin, the assembly of the spindle. Here. Disassembly or depolymerization of the tubule continues on. And so in time, there is a disruption of mitosis at metaphase. We'll come back to this because there's another class of compounds that works at the other end. And we will consider those. Now, cells become resistant to vinca alkaloids, and the primary mechanism is P-glycoprotein efflux pump. These are substrates for that P-glycoprotein pump to efflux the drug out of the cell. This pump or this protein, this transmembrane protein, the gene regulating it can be upregulated and the cell becomes resistant. Now, in terms of toxicity, let me talk first about what they have or what are the shared toxicities. Both of these drugs share the fact that they cause nausea, vomiting, and alopecia. Vinblastine, or B, vinblastine now has as its limiting toxicity bone marrow suppression. Vincristine has as its limiting toxicity peripheral neuropathy. The peripheral neuropathy usually is distal, usually is symmetrical, involves paresthesias of the fingers, of the toes, loss of deep tendon reflexes, ataxia, GI problems can result, can also involve the cranial nerve, and this can lead to hoarseness, it can lead to facial palsies, it can lead to pain in the jaw. All of these are reversible neuropathies. From a clinical point of view, vinblastine clinically is used to treat metastatic testicular cancer. It's used in a protocol with cisplatin. It's also used to treat non-Hodgkin lymphomas. Vincristine is used in protocols to treat acute lymphoblastic leukemia. It is used to treat Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. And it's also used to treat solid tumors, Wilms tumor, Ewing sarcoma as examples. So two compounds, both derived from plant, having differing dose-limiting toxicities and differing clinical uses. The neuritis, the peripheral neuritis being dose-limiting, doesn't mean it has no bone marrow, it's just not the limiting. Makes it then a useful drug to put in the protocol because it has a unique dose-limiting toxicity. There's another plant material, several others that we want to consider. There are a group of compounds derived from plants called podophyllotoxins. One in particular we're going to talk about, it's derived from a plant called the mayapple plant, and it's called etoposide. And there are a number of etoposides. This is the chemical structure, and they differ in terms of what is out here in the right field. These drugs work by, again, a different mechanism than what we have seen with other agents. And that is, they work to inhibit an enzyme that we have visited previously, but in a different context. The enzyme is topoisomerase 2. Topoisomerase 2 is the enzyme responsible for changing the topology of DNA. You remember we talked about the bacterial variant called DNA gyrase. This is an enzyme, topoisomerase 2, that clips, that breaks, that cleaves double-stranded DNA. And this clipping or cleaving of the double-stranded DNA relieves torsional strain in the DNA that allows for it to be transcribed and replicated. And this is shown here. Here's topoisomerase 2, the enzyme. Here's the double-stranded DNA. It binds to the double-stranded DNA. It transiently cleaves the DNA. So there's a cleavage, relieving the strain, allowing for transcription and replication of the genome, and then it's resealed. Both the cleaving and the resealing are topoisomerase 2 functions. Etoposide binds to the topoisomerase and it prevents it from proceeding with the resealing step. So it binds, the DNA is cleaved, but it does not proceed to resealing of the double-stranded cleaved DNA. Thus, transcription as well as replication ceases and there is degradation of the DNA. Cells become resistant to etoposide by also being pumped out. P-glycoprotein lowering the concentration in the cell to the point that the cell is not able to inhibit or be inhibited. The primary dose-limiting toxicity is bone marrow. Clinically, it has several uses. It's used in the treatment of Oat cell carcinoma of the lung and it's used in the treatment or the protocol for the treatment of testicular cancer. Its effects are synergistic with cisplatin. Don't ask me the mechanism, okay? Because I don't think it's known. So we are going to see in the treatment of testicular cancer that etoposide is combined with cisplatin to bring about cure. Okay. One more drug, and then I think we're at a spot that is the best to stop. And then I'll tell you where we're headed for the duration. There's one other plant material that was isolated, characterized, and shown to be effective for the treatment of resistant breast cancer. You probably are familiar with this drug. It's called Taxol. It comes from the bark. It originally came from the bark of a tree that grows in the Pacific Northwest called the Pacific Yew. The problem was, in order to access the drug, you had to chop down the trees. That was not a very good scenario. And so here you had a drug when it was first characterized that led to women with resistant breast cancer demanding it and tree huggers preventing it. And so that necessitated looking for another source of at least the primary structure of the compound that we know as Taxol. And now there is a not a tree, but a bush called the European yew, Y-E-W, that is the source of these taxanes. There are a group of taxanes that can be converted into various semi-synthetic derivatives. One of these is called docetaxel. We're going to only focus on this, taxol, and look at how it works and what are the limiting toxicities associated with it. How it works is similar to what we saw with the vinca alkaloids. The target for taxol is tubulin that is being polymerized into the mitotic spindle. But it works at the other end. We saw vinca alkaloids inhibited the assembly or the polymerization. Taxol binds to the spindle and blocks the disassembly, the depolymerization of the mitotic spindle, inhibiting mitosis at metaphase. This is a perfect national board question, let me tell you. Let me just mix in one other drug for fun. You remember we talked about griseofulvene inhibiting mitosis, okay? Just keep that in mind. Another drug, it's a minor drug. But these two drugs, the vinca alkaloids and taxol, have had a major impact clinically on the treatment of cancer. Resistance, P-glycoprotein pump efflux. Like the vinca alkaloids, these are M-phase cell cycle specific. Now, the side effects that one sees come in two forms, or that one encounters with this drug. It is moderately well tolerated. However, frequently, with high frequency, patients will develop hypersensitivity reactions. Urticaria, dyspnea, maybe even hypotension. This can be severe, and it is recorded to be severe in about 3 to 5% of patients. But many more will have milder symptoms of hypersensitivity. The source of the hypersensitivity, the cause of the hypersensitivity, is not the drug, but the vehicle in which the drug is given. The vehicle in which the drug is given goes by a fancy name called cremophore. C-R-E-M-O-P-H-O-R. Let me tell you what it is. It is a polyoxyethylated form of castor oil. It's a modified castor oil. Don't worry about the vehicle. Here's the deal. It is the vehicle that causes the hypersensitivity. There is now a form of Taxol available that is an albumin complex of Taxol whose administration is associated with dramatically decreasing hypersensitivity reactions. One can, if one uses the cremophore vehicle, reduce the hypersensitivity reactions by giving corticosteroids, antihistamines, etc. the primary dose limiting toxicity is on the bone marrow. Particularly neutropenia. And so again, one can reverse this severe neutropenia that puts the patient at incredible risk for all kinds of infections by giving one of the hematopoietic agents called granulite colony stimulating factor. Taxol is part of the treatment protocol for ovarian and breast cancers, particularly those that have become resistant to other agents, and for non-small cell lung cancer. We have looked at drugs that alkylate non-cell cycle specific anti-metabolites that mess up the process of RNA and DNA synthesis that are specific primarily to the S phase. We've looked at plant materials that function to inhibit mitosis, the vinca alkaloids and Taxol, and we are set up to look at a couple drugs after you eat turkey that function as antibiotics. Then, after we look at antibiotics, and you know these drugs, adriamycin and bleomycin, which are major drugs in the treatment of cancer, we will also look at hormones, and then we'll put this all together to look at, okay, what are the factors, the criteria that go into building a protocol? What are the considerations? What are some examples, not for memorization, some examples of how these drugs are used? So I wish you a glorious Thanksgiving. A lot of rest, a lot of food, a lot of family, and I will see you 1 week from today.